Hello, hello. How are you? I was just reading over your comments in for the module three assignments. Got some good stuff going on there. So hello. So check in. Let us know you're here. Say hey. All right. Oops. Hold on. I just accidentally touched a thing. Cool. I have the our face the our Facebook page open in case we need to refer to anything. So let me make this smaller so I could see the chat bigger because it's hiding on me. There we go. All right. All right, so hello, Anne, Alicia, Ula, Sandra, Marianne, Sonia, Anya, Stephanie, Stella. Long time no see, some of you ladies. Oh, yes, you did. Alyssa made it. Hello. Yeah, you could tell my voice is going. I've been like nonstop coaching calls all day. So, what a better way to spend a Saturday. I can't think of one. Yay, so excited to be here. So, how's it going? How is module three going? Why don't we do let's do a check-in. How about what let's start with a win. So far, since we started RRI, let's call it either. Let's do. I'll give you a choice. So either a win that you want to celebrate with us, or an insight that you've had that you want to celebrate with us. So type in the comments either a win or an insight, so we could share and celebrate. Oh, and Linda's in her jammies. Oh, come on. What if they're like cute with like, I don't know, like little puppies or rabbits or something. We could get to see what they are. All right. So let's see here. We've got PSS still working on assignment three. Breakthrough for us last week was noticing when Earl and I lost connection and found our personality types. Those are big. Those are huge. Yay! We could all like celebrate each other. That's fantastic. Really good. And then PSS started the master class on communication and intuition parts two and three. Well, you are on a roll. How are you doing all that? Fantastic. Let's see. Steph says, my win has been moving forward more than I ever have before with the walking partners dance. Excellent. Woo-hoo. Fantastic. Linda says it's winter here and I'm all rugged up. Okay. Well, no. So no, like pretty little jammies. You're all warm and cozy, which is nice. I love that. Sonia says, Bella and I had a great woodland walk. Lots of checking in. Yay, that's fantastic. Alicia says, "Win after helping me with Beanie's early morning barking a couple weeks ago. We are now having mostly quiet waking up first thing in the mornings." Woo-hoo! That's fantastic. Love that. Absolutely love that. Linda says, "We had a fabulous pod call where I was very supported by the members of the group. It was very emotional and a breakthrough for me." Awesome. I love that. I love breakthroughs. They're always hard. It's like we were just talking in the CAP coaching call. It's like going through the birth canal. Like it's like uncomfortable and like sort of painful at the moment, but on the other side of it, there's real like amazing things. So congratulations, Linda. And don't we just have the best women in our groups? And I'm so supportive and I love it. Love it, love it. Sarah says lots of quarterly check-ins, lots of insights. Well, good. Yay. Anne says insight. I had a picture in my head of Vincent as a bully. And I didn't update it with what he has learned this last 9 months. He's learned to be gentle and actually is gentle more than he's rough. I love that. That was huge. That's a huge insight, Anne. Congratulations. Woohoo! Big celebration. Sandra's insight is understanding that Nigella mirrors my mood and it's my thoughts and feelings which influence our day. Woohoo! That's like one of those like, ooh, I'm so glad I know this, but ooh. Like, but ooh, yeah, now I've gotta work on it. So, but yay, congratulations. That's a great insight. Really good. Stella says, our connection is now so strong, even with distractions. Fantastic. I love it. Really, really awesome. Let's see, Terry says, working on Vanilla's and my connection and walking partner stances at the door today made her calm for the first time ever at the door. Woo-hoo! First time ever. That is fantastic. Really, really awesome, you guys. Yay, lots of great stuff. So keep them coming. Keep them coming. And we'll dive into some coaching. You know, there was one thing that I noticed. I didn't get a chance to look at your check-in comments on the Module 3 Assignment 1 with the personality type. I haven't had a chance to go through that yet. But I did look through the comments on the activity chart, the balanced activities, and which are awesome, amazing, you guys. I'm so glad that you're working on that. And I have an observation that I noticed. And so I just want to put it out there as an opportunity for you to go back and look at your list and perhaps consider an adjustment for some of you. And I know not everyone has posted yet, but here's my observation. The thing that was sometimes missing, not always, but in some cases, what I was looking for was in the no to low arousal category, I was really looking for some pieces of or some opportunities for bonding, meaning oxytocin producing activity. So that requires that calm, loving touch. So something, it could just be, you know, just flat out like laying next to each other, snuggling and touching. It could be a more active type of touch, like petting or massaging or T-touch, you know, grooming behavior type if your dog loves that. You know, something that is oxytocin producing. So there was quite a few that were missing that piece. And it doesn't mean that you don't engage in that with your dog, of course, because you're only pulling out some of them. But I thought it was worth mentioning that that's a really important part. And one of the things that helps define that or helps, I don't know, give you maybe a reason to look more deeply at that is that we know from research that that loving touch that lasts at least 30 seconds minimal, 3 minutes better, is what induces calm and loving and bonding in social animals. And for so many of us, that's a missing piece, especially if we have dogs that are like more hyper or reactive or sensitive. And, you know, in some cases, finding those moments is challenging because maybe your dog doesn't like it, or it's hard to settle, you know. So I understand that there are challenges in some cases with that, with creating that opportunity. But I really want to invite everyone to look for that and see what you can do to create more of those opportunities. And maybe for some of your dogs and you, maybe sometimes it's going to start with, you know, like 10 seconds, and because maybe 30 seconds is just too much, you know, to go for right now, but that's okay. Start with 10 seconds, you know, and maybe setting up a thing is too much for your dog, or too much, you know, it's just too hard. It puts too much pressure. So maybe it's just going to happen more like coincidentally, you know, kind of like you're going to find those moments in your daily life where you can physically and lovingly connect in that way to produce more of those calming, loving, bonding feelings between you and your dog. If you can do that, it's really going to pay off. It's going to be big, right? So start where you are and see what you can do, you know, and maybe in some cases, it's not that it's that difficult. It's just that you don't make the time, or you don't make the effort, or it doesn't seem that important. Maybe you're still in a mindset of, I need to, you know, it's more important for me to exercise my dog, or, you know, give my dog enriching activities, or provide opportunities for my dog, you know, to do something more active. And if you find yourself, as we're talking now, or maybe as you go back and think about this, if you find yourself having those thoughts, I would invite you to, you know, dig a little deeper. Get underneath the surface, go dig in a little bit more and look at why you're thinking that, where those thoughts are coming from, where those beliefs originated from, and just start processing that and looking and start to look at, well, why, you know, why is it so hard for me to make the time or create opportunities to do this beautiful bonding, calm, quiet bonding thing with my dog, you know, and maybe it's just because it's hard for your dog, right? For all kinds of reasons, right? And still, you know, I want you to look for those, maybe just one moment at a time, right? But maybe what you'll find is it's just the way you're thinking about it. Like you're thinking that my dog needs more exercise. My dog needs more thinking activity. And so many times we default into occupying our dogs or distracting our dogs with something like, you know, chew a Kong, chew a bone, you know, do a snuffle mat, whatever, instead of actually connecting with our dog and actually bonding with our dog. And not that those things are bad or we shouldn't do them. That's not what I mean. I'm inviting you to look at what's motivating you, what's underneath the surface of why you're offering that to your dog, and where does it come from? And if it's coming from a place of, my dog needs to be occupied and distracted in order to be calm, now that's part of your story, right? So now we can look at, like, is that old story going to be serving me? Like, do I really need to distract my dog from feeling a connection and from collaborating and from just really relaxing? Right? Am I just using that as a pacifier and as a substitute for real bonding time with my dog? And in most cases, when we do that, it's not, we're not, certainly not consciously thinking those thoughts. So you're not saying, well, I don't really want to bond with my dog. I'm just going to give him a chew bone instead. I know you don't do that, but it happens subconsciously, right? It happens like sometimes it just takes like 30 seconds of really connecting with our dog and bonding with our dog in that calm, loving way to get them to settle and to feel, to have that experience of being heard, being listened to, being unconditionally loved without being distracted by some other activity. So in other words, I'll replace this activity that I don't want you to engage in with this other activity that is more acceptable. But the thing that's still missing is the connection and the love and the bonding and the you know, the deepness, the richness of that is still missing, right? And I'm not saying that is true for you. What I'm saying is just take a look at it. Take a look at it. So I wanted to share that with you, because that was just the feeling I was getting in some cases today. And I thought it's a great thing to bring up. I don't think we talk enough about that and what's underneath, like why we're doing some of these, you know, these low or no arousal activities. And there's more to it than just keeping your dog quiet. Right. And so that whole nother layer is actually bonding. And through that loving touch, and it's so powerful. So, so powerful. And just like kind of a sidebar, I don't remember who it was, but someone put in the low arousal activity, sleeping overnight. Our activity chart. And so I thought, well, if one person is thinking that, then there's probably others. And so I just want to remind everyone that what we're talking about is not sleeping overnight. So this is the rest of the day. You know what I mean? And so we're looking at the times for like normal engagement where something is happening, not sleeping overnight. Okay, so that doesn't count because it's not what we're looking. I mean, obviously it counts as everyone needs overnight sleeping time, but it doesn't count with the activities. We're looking at the time that you have available. And so that averages out to about 6 hours a day for most of us in our family. So we're looking at about 6 hours per day of non-sleeping time for our dogs, like non-overnight sleeping time. So about 6 hours. So we're breaking that like 4 to 6 hours down into those percentages, right? And so, you know, 15% high arousal, you know, da da da, and 50% no to low arousal. And then the other thing that I wanted to bring up, just because I thought, well, it came to my mind, so there must be, you know, I felt like a need to just say this again, and I don't know that I actually read anything in here that triggered this thought, but I don't know, something triggered the thought, and that is that we want to do our best to not engage in over arousal activities, right? And so we never want to go for over arousal ever. Sometimes it's going to happen, but we're not building in over arousal, right? So high arousal is not over arousal, okay? I just wanted to make sure that everyone is really good with that understanding. Over arousal, like when our dog is just unreachable, having a meltdown, disconnected, can't listen, can't hear, we can't have a positive influence on our dog, we can't role model, right, because they're just over aroused. Those don't go on our list of activities, right? they may happen sometimes, you know what I mean? But those are the types of activities that we are doing all we can to avoid and to minimize in our life. Okay. So I felt like I needed to clarify that. Okay. So any questions about that piece? I'm going to look in the chat again, but I just wanted to bring that forward and then we can do coaching. But any questions about that particular piece? And is anyone having any difficulty with figuring that out or managing to have, you know, to build in those bonding, oxytocin producing times with your dog? And you know, maybe we could help you with that. Let's see. Ann says, so side by side on the couch with one hand stroking while I read, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect for sure. Sandra said, I do feel guilty sometimes when we stay in bed and snuggle for half an hour rather than getting up and getting onto the fields. Yeah, so just eliminate that guilt, because that's part of your, that half an hour that you spend in bed snuggling and enjoying, that's important. That's really important, right? So that goes into your, onto your list of, you know, no arousal, bonding, oxytocin producing activity. So that, you know, that's fantastic, right? So just eliminate that guilt, knock that guilt right out of the story there. Let's see, PS says it's helpful for, and where I was stuck. You're welcome. Jen says, thanks for the reminder about high versus over. Yes. Okay. Linda says, I would like some suggestions as to how to give Kimba a new job assignment so he can let go of his self-appointed guard dog duties. What sort of jobs can I give him as a replacement? Yeah, we could definitely talk about that. So before we move into that, into the coaching segment, I just want to just double check with so far, this topic of activity chart. Any other questions? Alyssa said, we talked about this in the pod call. It was powerful. Good. Yay. So any insight you want to share about that, I'm sure it would be helpful. Okay, so we're overall pretty good. Lori says, can you talk about how to break up the 24-hour cycle? Yes, that would be another great thing to talk about. So we can put it into the context of like real life, if you want to jump on, for sure. Okay, so Linda, let's dive in. So can you unmute? Can you come on and we can chat about this? Let me know.
Did that work?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Yay. Can definitely hear you. Okay. So tell me a little bit about the guard dog duty. So is it, like in the house, he's guarding? Is it when he's outside? Is it all, like, give me some background.
We live on 3 acres, and there's an easement on one side of the property and a main road on the other. Okay. And he's just decided that anything that comes in his realm, he needs to bark at. Whether it's a kid on the bicycle, a car going up the driveway. Now on the road, they've made this area an area for bicycle people to travel. So now we've got more activity with bikes going up and down the road. Could be a dog walking up and down with its owner. It's just anything that's, he feels, yeah. I believe, in his realm. So,
does he do that only when he's outside, or does he also see them while he's in the house?
And he can be absolutely dead asleep and a bicycle can go down the road, which you can't even see, and he's off running with the fairies.
Okay. When he's in the house?
Yes.
Okay.
He can sense that there's something outside that he needs to take care of.
Okay.
The other day, the neighbor had her chickens walking down the driveway. You couldn't hear it. You couldn't see it because there was a fence. And he knew they were there and went off. So he's very alert. Right. And he's very good at this job that he's given himself. But I'd like to help change that to something that's beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. So, I mean, just before we brainstorm some jobs, just like a quick overview run through. I mean, there's a lots of other things, other pieces that contribute to that type of behavior, right? So like, for example, the activity chart, like, so keeping him as safe, calm, and happy as possible, and providing other opportunities through the activity chart. Like, so things like that. So like, I guess what I'm saying is that there are pieces that we're going to be pulling in that will support the idea of the new job that you give him, you know what I mean? So the mm-hmm. new job isn't going to be a standalone thing that's going to all of a sudden change his guarding, sentinel behavior. You know what I mean? All the pieces are going to come together, including your pieces of, you know, stepping into being a solid role model and helping him to make better decisions, et cetera. You know what I mean? So all the things. So the job will just be a piece of that, but it could be a really important piece. So so what have you tried? Have you thought about any jobs so far? What kind of a dog is he?
Border Collie.
Okay, so he's a Border Collie. And how old is he?
He'll be 3 in September.
Okay. And and have you try to give him a job so far?
Well, we have activities with him. We'll play frisbee and do those kinds of things. But that doesn't last very long compared to the rest of the waking hours of the day.
Right. The overall. Yeah. Right. So have you tried to give him a real job to do, like in his mind? So have you, in other words, have you experimented with the job yet?
No.
So you're just starting. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. So normally, this isn't 100%, but let's say more times than not, when we have a dog that is, a self-appointed sentinel, the kind of job that does not work well for them is a sentinel type of job. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I would tend to cross off the list, but we will look into it, because there are some exceptions to that. But generally speaking, most dogs that self-appoint as sentinel don't do that job very well. Like, they're not equipped to do that job well. And so they kind of, like what your dog is doing, Linda, they end up giving a lot of false alarms and upsetting the family, upsetting the peace. They're not, their warning or their alerting is not in service. You know what I mean? And so most dogs that do that are not coming from a place of, like, I'm a natural sentinel. I just need more training. I just need more on the job training. Okay. Because sometimes that's the case. Like, oh, you just need more help with how to be the right kind of sentinel. That's a small percentage. Most dogs that take that on as their job don't, that's not a good job for them. They're not designed, their personalities, their background, et cetera, it doesn't suit them well as a job. You know what I'm saying? So let's dive into that a little bit, as far as like what type of job might suit him. So have you figured out what personality type Kimba is?
I believe he's unbalanced fire and wood secondary. And I'm just the opposite. my husband is metal through and through, and Zuri, our other dog, is the earth mother.
Okay, so you think he's predominantly fire.
Unbalanced.
But he's unbalanced.
Yes,
okay.
Very unbalanced.
So
yeah.
So that would mean that he's by nature very social and friendly and likes he's like a party animal. He likes to be the center of
no,
the party.
No, not at all. That's why I'm calling him unbalanced, because he's not social at all. But in the unbalanced part of fire, it talks about anxious, nervous, tense. So that's where I picked that up from. He is excitable. He is funny. He's high strung. I wouldn't say social at all. But the unbalanced part is anxious, nervous, and tense. So that's where I picked that up from.
Right. Well, we can have anxious, nervous, tense in any, you know, in the other personalities. Well, like water could easily be anxious, nervous, and tense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we want to look at what's the first way we do that is look at where, like, what comes through as his normal. So like with people that he knows, dogs that he knows, whatever, is he pretty much outgoing and friendly?
No, I would say no. Bit nervous, I'd say.
Okay. And so let's just put it into the context of people that he knows, right? That he likes, like, not that he doesn't like, people that he knows and likes or loves. Is he more gregarious and social with them and likes to stay engaged and friendly with them?
Sort of. Once, we don't have many people that come over, so it's hard to kind of judge this, but somebody does come over, they both go crazy for the initial 5 minutes or so, and then both settle down. Mm-hmm. Zuri's a much more social one. No, he's a bit standoffish, I'd say. That's why it's been hard to pick out what his primary.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like he's a fire personality, right? Because that's like, you know, that's like the very first thing core is, like, if all things, like, even if someone's imbalanced, like, let's say we had an imbalanced fire dog, that might mean that in certain situations that cause discomfort or stress or what, like something about it doesn't fit them, doesn't suit them, they're going to show the imbalanced side, right? They're going to be anxious and stressed, whatever, right? But outside of that type of circumstance, when they're in a circumstance where they are, you know, comfortable, like it's part of their normal life, they're very gregarious and outgoing and friendly.
Then he's probably not fired then, I'd say. I don't know what else he would be.
Okay. Well, so you had mentioned wood, that you thought maybe he was secondary wood, I think. Did you say that? Or did I?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay. So maybe wood.
Well, it's possible, I suppose.
So is he more, would he be that, you know, he might be more so I want you to think about circumstances where he's not like ordinary circumstances where he's not feeling stressed or worried about something, you know what I mean? So very ordinary, right? So your everyday life, you're out with your dogs and you're playing Frisbee or you're playing ball, or you're out, like you're hanging out together and there's nothing weird going on, right? So in that type of a circumstance, does he tend to be more competitive with Zuri? Like, I want to get the ball first. It's my turn.
Yes, very much so. He's got to be out the door first, and she picks up a toy, he'll try and grab it. And he like a bit of a bully in a way, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. And does he tend to like to, I know it's kind of hard to sort things out sometimes when you have a border collie who by nature wants to control things. But they still have, you know, their personality type still rises up in certain ways. Right. And so would you say that he likes to, I don't know, like sort of take charge of situations and like he has ideas about how things should go, and he's like, he expresses them, and like, I think we should do this next. And he tries to he'll campaign mm-hmm. for a thing, you know, like he has ideas about how things should be.
I don't think so. That would be more the Wood, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. No. He is, if you're, I'm reading this Wood now, he is definitely athletic. He can run like the wind.
Yeah.
He'll go and go and go until he just drops.
Okay.
Competitive, I would say. He'd probably be a great Frisbee dog in competition, but he couldn't stand being around all the other dogs and handle right. the pressure.
Right.
So we tried that for a while, and it was just too nerve-wracking. And so we thought, forget this. This is not beneficial.
I wonder if he's more Wood, looking at Wood in balanced Wood. Anything there? Kind of jump out at you.
Aggressive. He's not really aggressive, but I think he could be a biter. You know, I'm a little worried.
I mean, aggressive doesn't necessarily mean violent. It could be, but aggressive can mean like I know what I want and I'm going for it. And you know what I mean? Like don't get in my way. You know what I mean? So aggressive could be more like that versus violent, you know?
Okay.
So do you think, looking at it like that, would you say, you know, that he can be aggressive? Like I'm going to go for this no matter what, even if it's not aligned with what I know to be true about our family. And even if it puts someone else out, you know, even if I'm taking something away from someone else, I'm going for it, even if it's at someone else's expense.
I don't know if that fits exactly, but what comes to mind is, let's say you're even sitting down bonding like you were just talking about, and a car goes down the driveway. He's out like a shot, bark, bark, bark all along the whole driveway, and you can't get him back till he's finished. Mm-hmm. That's a big issue, and that's one of the things
it
causes havoc in our household, because my husband thinks you should just call him and he comes back happy, and it doesn't happen.
Right. Well, let's say, you know, I mean, go ahead and dive into that a little bit more and think about it. But right now, I'm thinking about Wood.
Okay.
It's him more, based on what little I know, you know, what you're saying now, it feels more, he definitely does not feel fire seem at all.
Okay.
But there are traits in him that are more Wood-like. So let's just play around. Let's just go with that for now. And you could all, you know, and so he may have like a strong second. He may not have a strong secondary, but he may have a strong secondary that sort of makes the Wood seem like, oh, not quite exactly it. You know what I mean? And that, and mm-hmm. so that's where the strong secondaries can be slightly confusing. And so for him, like, I almost want to say, I wonder if he's more, if his secondary might be metal, because like he wants things in order. He doesn't like things out of order. He doesn't like people passing by. He doesn't like all that uncontrolled activity. And so that could be metal, but it also, he also, I don't know, like you could think about it, but it's also possible that he has more water, where he doesn't like, not like, how can I say this? Like it almost feels like when his Wood is like he can't control things, you know, more like the Wood nature versus the metal nature. And mm-hmm. if he has a strong water secondary, that could cause him anxiety and that type of feel, like where he could get anxious and worried about it and retreat. Does he tend to more retreat once he gets into more anxiety, or does he tend to stay out?
No, he doesn't retreat at all. He'll stay barking at whatever it is until either of that
not necessarily
away.
Not necessarily bark. I'm talking about in general in his life. Like if something sort of stresses him out or he gets worried, does he not about chasing something outside the fence, but someone speaks loudly in the house. Like if you and your husband were to, someone were to yell or something, does he tend to, what would he be like come out and say, hey, who's yelling at who? We're not supposed to be yelling. Or would he say, oh, someone's yelling, I'm going to go hide in the bathroom?
Yeah, probably. Zuri's the one that would come up and try and solve everything, and he would be more reluctant to get involved.
He would more shrink back.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, so probably more. So maybe. So something. So play around with wood, water. Okay. And see with that. Okay. So, but it gives me some more ideas about who he is and what's going on as we talk through that piece. So we could look at jobs, and this should be helping everyone that's on the call today and everyone listen to replays as well. Okay. So let's go with this idea that a sentinel job, type of job, is not going to serve either one of you. It's not going to help lead him toward feeling satisfied. Sorry, I got a tickle. I've been talking too much today. So we want to look for, sorry, I'm going to mute myself. We want to look for jobs that are going to help him to feel satisfied, and through that satisfaction, enable you to switch his focus from what he's doing now into what he would naturally prefer to do if he was thinking more clearly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with a wood, competitive, a good leader, kind of bossy, can fall into aggression or let's just say over assertiveness, if imbalanced, can tend to be, and especially coupled with that water, can tend to be more by nature not want to be at the front, and so it's a bit of a conflict, right? A wood would want to be in the front and say, let's organize a baseball game, or let's organize a soccer game right now. All right, you the center, you're taking the wing, where a water would tend to be, let's just, more stand back-ish, and not so much out in front, but be able to organize things, but in a more subtle way. So I'm thinking something that's more along the lines of organizational, and that will help him to feel that he's able to lead in that way, but without triggering his anxiety or aggression. So there could be all sorts of things. I don't know what you have going, but let's look at it from I would love to tell others what to do, and I want to be really good at that, or I want to be really good at anything that I do. Okay, so let's just look there first, because I think that might be give us some of that. We want to look for easy things, and then you can grow as you go. So what kind of jobs that would he do naturally that maybe he's already doing and you could expand on, that would tap into his feeling satisfied with like I'm really good at this, and I want, and I love being acknowledged at how good I am. So what do you have in your life that you could tap into in that regard? Any ideas?
The only thing I can think of, because I'm really looking for suggestions, is these, what give him for a job. Like, he's very good at find it, his sense of smell and his scent finding, if you want to call it that, is remarkable.
Okay.
So those kind of games, but again, they don't last very long. You know, it's a few minutes and there.
That's all right. We're not looking to, you know, like employ him as a nurse and he has to work 12 hour shifts. That's not what jobs are about.
Okay.
So let's maybe talk about that for a minute. So jobs for our dogs are simply a means for us, an opportunity for us to allow our dogs to feel that they are a contributing member of our family group. That's what we're talking about. Okay. So we want him to feel that he can contribute to the overall, you know, health, happiness, and harmony of the family in some way, to satisfy that sense of belonging and that the social needs that we have, that he has as a social animal, that we have as a social animal. Like, we need to contribute in some way, or we just don't feel good. We don't like that. So he needs to contribute in some way. So we're not looking at an occupation that keeps him busy for hours a day. That's not what we're talking about. It's more psychological. It's more, you know, I'm using the word psychological loosely here. It's more, you know, and he knows that he has, that he's contributing, and that helps him to relax and feel calm and feel like he belongs better. Right? Because right now he doesn't feel like he belongs, and he doesn't feel that he's contributing. Right. And so he's making up this job of chasing things off, right, and trying to control that environment, and feeling unsuccessful. Well, he is sort of successful because everyone's actually going away, but he's not appreciated for it in the family.
No, he's unappreciated, and especially by my husband, who screams and yells at him and makes the whole thing worse.
Exactly, right? So we want him to serve the family in a way that he feels appreciated, right? So it's not something, and I don't want you to think about this idea of giving a dog a job as something that occupies him, right? That's not what we're talking about in this context, a job that allows our dogs to feel that they are appreciated members of the family from their service. Okay. So now that we bring that in, we're, you know, there's jobs that can substitute for like a herding dog's desire to herd things. There's that type category of a job, right? And you already have those, right? You know, frisbee and find it games, right? He's controlling things and he can be really good at it. So that part of his personality, the wood and the border colliness, can be very satisfied with controlling a frisbee, controlling a ball, playing tri-ball, letting him, you know, hurt a big ball, that kind of a thing, right? But the other type of job that is equally or more important is the kind of job that helps him to feel that he's truly appreciated for his service to the family group.
Well, that would be perfect, but what would that be?
Well, that's what we're talking about, right? And so it could be, I don't know. I mean, I don't know him. I don't know what you have, but it could be something physical, right? It could be something physical, like uh, I want you to help me to pick up all the dog toys and put them into this basket every day. And part of your job is to keep tidy things up. And I know you're so good at that. You're so good at finding all the toys and locating them. And you're really good at bringing things to me. And I want you to serve in that way. So that's an idea, like have him clean up in the similar. So it could be something very physical like that. Like clean, you're in charge of cleaning up the dog toys, right? You're in charge of, let's say he likes to go out first. I'm just picking up little things. So it doesn't need to be one job. It could be a whole series of jobs. You like to go out first. However, you're not just going out first because, well, you're a wood dog and you're competitive about that. When you go out first, what you're going to do is go out so that you're prepared to greet Zuri and then escort her in a game of whatever, chase in the yard, right? And so you actually have a job. Your job is to go out there first so that you can greet her and initiate the game that you like to play. You know, so put it into the context of this is your job, right? So look for little things like that. Like your part of your job here is to let us know, maybe this is something you could play around with. Let us know when you hear the chickens in the driveway, which is really hilarious, by the way. Let us know when you smell the chickens in the driveway by, I don't know, coming to my feet and putting your paw on my right knee. Let me know that there are chickens in the driveway because my job is to give permission for the chickens to be in the driveway and to keep you and the family safe from the chicken. I'm just being silly, but you know, to keep the, my job is to keep the family safe from the chickens in the driveway. My job is to give permission and give access to the bicycles and the cars and people, whatever, that are walking past the yard. That's my job. Your job is to be at my side and be my assistant, my calm and quiet assistant, as we send love and, you know, and sparkly stars to the bicycles and the kids and the people that are passing by so that they are happy to keep moving in a calm and beautiful way. Our job is to acknowledge them for passing quietly and calmly and send them love as they do. That's our job, right? We've given them permission. I've given them permission. Your job as my assistant is to blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Make that up. Make it suit you and your personality and him. But you know what I mean? That he's your assistant, right? You know, so like inform him like, hey, I've given these people permission to pass in that access way. And we love that they're there, right? We love being able to facilitate people going off and having an enjoyable time on their walks and on their bike rides and whatever, whatever. This is amazing. I need your help to let them know how appreciated they are, because the more happy people there are, the more happy chickens there are, the more happy kids there are riding bikes in the world, the better place the world is. And so we love when kids and bikes and chickens go past. We love that. And I need you to assist me in sending and appreciating them and sending them all that love so they get to actually enjoy that process instead of being worried about passing our house, right? And making them anxious. Okay. You know what I mean? So you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm not sure how I'll get there, but I like the idea of saying I'm giving them permission versus, oh geez, there's those damn kids on the bikes again.
Exactly. And so part of the process, Linda, is that when we reframe how we think about things and what our dog is doing and what's happening out in the world that's upsetting our dogs, when mm-hmm. we can reframe it into something that's useful, that empowers us and empowers our dogs get a completely different vibe about it. And yes. that different vibe that they get is what cracks open the door to changing their behavior. Because part of their behavior is based on the vibe that they're getting from us. Now, maybe we had no vibe at all until they started barking, right? But the moment they started barking and annoying us with the barking, the vibe that they get is, and probably the thought that we had is, I wish those frickin' people and kids and bikes, whatever, would not ride past here. And exactly. that just reinforces yeah. for the dog that those people shouldn't be going past our house. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Okay, thanks.
Right. And so, we want to just reframe it. Now, what that looks like in application is what you get to work on, right? You get the opportunity to figure out, like, oh, well, how can I make this work? Well, one thing that is I'm not going to be able to communicate that to him if he's takes off and he's running down the yard and running 3 acres away and he's running down the fence line and I'm way over here. I can't help him with that, to have that job. I can't teach him that job if he's not with me. Right? And so one of the first things is for you to figure out, well, I wonder what I can do to help keep him with me so that he could learn that job. Because I have no opportunity to teach him that job if he's off running the fence line.
Okay.
Right? So what can that look like? Any ideas?
Well, go back to the walking partners dance and the paying attention to each other. What do you call it? The dance invite stuff. We don't do that particularly well, as you probably figured out.
That all happens on the side in your life, you know, but I'm talking mm-hmm. about like, what can you do very directly when he goes outside and chances are high that he's going to be running down to the fence. You know what I mean? And you don't want him to do that anymore. Because you have no chance of keeping his over arousal minimized, and you have no chance to teach him his job, right? And so you got to figure out a way to keep him with you. It doesn't have to be as, as tight as like walking partner's dance, because then he can't be a dog and he can't potty and he can't roll and run. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's something in the middle. There's something in between. The only time he gets to be outside is if he's at your side and running the fence without you. Like, there's something in the middle there that we need to figure out. So it could be, I don't know. It could be that you work at connecting with him at like on a long line. So not just letting him run on the like bang, 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 hitting the end of the long line, but giving him the space to be a dog and sniff and run and play under your supervision until he gets the idea. Maybe it's you have to for a while only go out with him, you know, and so he doesn't get to go out in the yard unless you're able to be present and with him. And if he needs, and let's say that you have to work or whatever, but he needs to go out, he needs to go potty or whatever, what else can you do? Can you put up a small pen or something that's right off the back door that he could go out to potty and hang out That's right next to the house. You know what I mean? That is a stage, like a stepping stone to the day when he can have, you know, you can let him out by himself with the whole yard once he really understands what this is all about. You know, once you have new habits established, et cetera. You know, so you need to have like a bridge from where you are now to where he's going to be. You've got to bridge that with some management pieces. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Have some work to do. Okay. Thank you very much.
And that's also, and when you do that, when you start to like brainstorm that and figure out some ideas and experiment, you know what I mean? Just experiment with it. You're also at the same time minimizing or removing opportunities like for your husband to get upset and yell at him, which is only making you more upset and making your dog more upset, which is making him more likely to run the fence. And you know what I'm saying? And so we're also looking at helping your husband to relax too, so that everyone can start to relax.
Bingo.
Well, no, I mean, it's a big thing. And so we look at when we're looking at safe, calm, and happy, we're trying to figure out where do we all intersect together, where how can I create opportunities where everyone gets to feel safe, calm, and happy, right? Because right now with your dog running out and barking and everything, it's upsetting everyone, right? And so what can we do? How can we set things up? How can we manage? How can we change things around? You know, how can we go out? How can we go outside? How can we start the outside? How can we, you know, how can we set things up as an interim bridge in order to like get everyone's stress buckets to empty, start to get all that cortisol to drop down because everyone is stressed about it. You know what I mean? And then when you add in all the other pieces and you add in some job pieces, now you're going to start to, you know, like the job pieces, for example, are going to start to give you and your dog opportunities to create some new habits, right? But in order to create new habits, we have to figure out how to not keep rehearsing the old stuff, right? It's like if you want to, you know, if someone wants to, you know, I don't know, quit smoking cigarettes, one of the easiest ways is to, you know, like for now, not hang out in pubs with your friends that all smoke. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to say it's not possible to quit smoking while you do that, but it's going to be a lot harder, you know? And it's not like you're never going to be able to go to pubs with your friends that all smoke. It's just like right now, until you have some new habits established and some new replacement activities, you know what I mean? It's just going to be too hard. And so it's the same thing with your dog. Until you have some new habits in place and some new ways of being together and some new ways of thinking together and collaborating together, and the stress buckets start to get emptied, until that day, now we need to figure out how to make it as easy as possible for everyone. So that's what you're going to be brainstorming right now, is figuring out some ideas and experimenting with ideas and seeing what works, what doesn't work. Sometimes you're going to make a mistake, or you're going to try something that's going to be a big bust out. It's going to suck. Other times you're going to go, okay, this is better. This is kind of working. Let me see what else, you know, and while you're doing the management pieces in that bridge, now you have the opportunities to practice your walking partner's dance sometimes, practice your dance invitation sometimes, practice teaching him some new jobs, practice some new habits with how we go in and out and all that, you know. But without the management piece that interrupts the old habits, we don't have opportunities to do those other things. That makes sense?
Yep, sure does.
Okay. Well, can't wait to.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Hear your ideas. Yay. You're welcome. Okay. What else? What else we got? What other questions? Charlene said, I never thought it was a job. Thought it was just adorable. Oh, Teddy brings them to me. Oh, slippers. Teddy brings me my slippers. It could be a job. Absolutely. Anne says Vince keeps track of where Flora goes outside. So that could be his job. He actually watches her from the, absolutely. I mean, the thing we want to think about is the job, like, is that job that seems natural? Is everybody okay with it long term? Like, because we don't want to create another bad habit, right? And so, like, take Anne's example. If Flora hates that Vince is watching her because she feels like he's stalking her, and then he waits, in a certain place, and then he dive bombs her as she goes past, like, you know what I mean? If that were to be the case, that wouldn't be a good job for him, you know what I mean? Because long term, it's not going to work out, right? But if it's not going in that direction, and if it just keeps him like, I want to keep track, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not looking for that. I'm not like looking for that intel so that I could harass her later. Then great. It's a great job, right? So we always want to think down the line, is this a job that's going to long-term be useful and keep the family in harmony, right? Just like if we have a dog that starts, barking out the window, right? And when that habit, or barking at the fence, someone walking past, at first it might not seem like a big deal, like, oh, he's being a dog, he's barking, oh, look at him, being so protecting me, I love that he's protecting me. That might seem to be the case when that first starts to happen, but it can quickly turn into, oh, my dog thinks that his job now is to protect me from everything and everyone and all every noise and every smell. And now I have to be on hyper alert and on the job 24/7, 365, right? And it could easily turn that way. And so we want to, here's my take on this whole thing, this whole topic of dogs that, a dog, the idea that a dog is going to help protect us. A dog is going to help protect us from something out of the ordinary, something that we actually need protecting from by nature. We don't need to allow our dogs to bark at everything out the window, for example, or everything that passes by the fence, in order to have a dog that will alert us to something dangerous. Our dogs can very easily, they're very capable of discerning when something is dangerous or potentially dangerous and when something is just rather ordinary. Our dogs are perfectly capable and intelligent enough and cognizant enough to discern the difference. And if we let ourselves get confused with this idea of my dog isn't capable of discerning the difference of when someone is at the door that I don't want to come in, and when it's just our neighbor or our delivery person or our friend, if we allow ourselves to think those thoughts that we have to have it all one way or the other, even if it's unconscious, sometimes that thought is like subconscious, then we're doing our dogs and ourselves and our whole family a disservice, because now what we're communicating to our dog is, I need you to be on guard all the time and alert me to everything that might, that doesn't live here. You know what I mean? Alert me to everything. And there's a lot of things in everything. And we're letting it up to our dog to decide what everything is. And so in a lot of cases, it's going to keep snowballing and snowballing and snowballing. Instead, if we say to our dog, our young dog or our new dog that barks out the window, if we step in and we say, hey, dude, I really appreciate you offering to, you know, alert me that, you know, the neighbors are walking past our house or the kids are riding their bike past our house. Really appreciate the thought. However, that is not your job, okay? Your job is to let me know when our family is in imminent danger. And I know that you can tell the difference. And so please alert me when something is putting us in danger. And the rest of the stuff, that's up to me. I will decide. I'll let you know if something is untoward or something is out of the ordinary or something is causing me concern. I'll let you know. Right? And I'm handling that. That's my job to keep us safe. It's my job to keep the family safe. You are my backup. If there's ever a time when I cannot keep the family safe because of some reason where blah, 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 you are my backup and I trust you to back me up. All the rest of the stuff, dude, that is not your job. Let me at it. And that's up to us to establish that right from the beginning. You know, it's up to us to tell our dogs, I don't need you to be, you know, to be the, you know, the boy that cries wolf at like a gazillion times a day, because that is not helpful. As a matter of fact, not only is that not helpful, it puts the entire family in danger, because one, we're upset all the time. We're stressed and anxious all the time because you are alerting to ordinary things. And number two, and this is really important, so pay attention, bud. Number two is, if something seriously is dangerous, we won't believe you because you're telling us every freaking thing is dangerous. So here's the deal. Stop it. We don't do that. I don't need you to do that. I am in charge of that. That's my job. Okay. Your job, be my assistant, and you've got some other jobs to do. All right. And so let's just be really, really clear about that. And for so many over the years, so many people, especially women, believe that that their dogs aren't capable of discerning the difference, and they err on the side of letting their dogs be inappropriate because they want their dogs to protect them when they need protection. And I'm here to tell you that if you need protection, your dog is going to protect you. You're not going to have to ask for it. You're not going to have to train for it. You're not going to have to let your dog rehearse protecting you all the time, every day, over things that you don't need protecting from. You just don't. So examine your thoughts, examine your thinking. And if you're having any of those thoughts, if they're subconscious thoughts, look for them and then reframe those things and really understand that your dog is putting your family in jeopardy. If you're of a mindset that you want your dog to protect you, that's okay. But look closely at your thinking and really understand that your dog is doing the opposite of protecting you when you don't step in as the loving leader that your dog needs and inform your dog that all that excess barking and boundary sentineling and all that stuff, it's not helpful and it's making your life a lot worse. Okay. So clear that up, you know, like just kind of think that through. Cause I see it so often. All right. Alyssa says, when I don't want to wear my dog's name out, but I need a connection, I'll ask, are they ready? This means, hey, I've got something good over here where I am. It can be either a bridge toward an invite or a clue that I'm about to do something. I feel that they're like, yeah, that's great. Absolutely. And the way we do that is the tone and the energy with which we do that can make a big difference for the resulting response in our dog. And so if we have a very excitable, easily arousable dog, We don't want to say, are you ready? Are you ready? Right? We want to see, we want to be more calm. Say, hey, dude, are you ready? You know, hey, buddy, you know, hey, Sue, are you ready? You know, whatever, right? So it's more even and flatter sounding. So we just want to be mindful about how we say things. But yeah, absolutely. I will make some phrase or some word or some, I will say something a lot of times when I want to let my dogs know that I'm here, in case you didn't notice me, I'm here. And I have an ask. I have something to ask you. I have an offer for you. I have an invitation for you. I want to check in with you, right? And so I will just say something. And so, right, there's no reason to, you know, because 95% rule, we don't say our dog's name, you know, in a way that would have an expectation of attention if we're not 95% sure that that's the result that we'll get, you know, is our attention. So great point, Alyssa. Okay, Andrea says, can you speak about how personality types might interact and affect our partnership or struggles? For example, Tobias is fire and maybe wood, water, and I am water, earth. Yeah, I mean, we're going to dive deeply into that in July. In BPA, for sure, right? So that's going to be part two, is how the personalities impact, you know, behavior and partnership and training and all the things. So we'll definitely be diving deeper into that and talking about that. And so specifically, if your dog is let me open this up. Give me a second. Thought I had the right folder open, but I don't. So give me 1 second here. Okay, maybe 1 minute. Because I thought I had this open. There we go. No. Okay, I think this is the right one. Let me see. I wanted to open up this file. And well, like I said, we'll be, you know, you'll be studying this and we'll be coaching on this next month, all month. That's kind of our focus. But let's just look at some basic things for Andrea. So we have a fire dog and a water human. Okay. And so if our fire dog is full of heart and joy, funny, social, loves to be loved, they love to influence, they tend to be hyper and noisy, right? And they're very social and outgoing and engaging. Like that's who they are, right? And then we have a water person who's introverted, quiet, a good listener, consistent, you know, a dreamer. We can see how a water person is potentially going to find their fire dog's personality as chaotic and demanding and annoying in some cases, right? And so knowing that we have a fire dog and we're a water person, and my fire dog wants engagement and action and wants to be social, and I'm an introvert and I like calm and quiet, you know what I mean? Just knowing that about us is going to inform me that it's likely that I'm going to interpret my fire dog's social, outgoing, wanting to engage nature as being demanding and inappropriate. You know what I mean? That I'm going, there's going to be an influence on how I interpret my dog's personality because of the difference. You know what I'm saying? And so knowing that my interpretation of my dog's behavior is going to be influenced by my own personality, that opens up the door for me to, from that place of awareness, to consider how else I might interpret my dog's behavior. That, okay, maybe I'm seeing my dog through the eyes of a water personality, right? I'm seeing my fire dog through the eyes of water. So what if I just was more detached from that for a moment and I just saw my dog, my dog's personality without putting myself in the picture? Can I step back and just make an observation like, oh, my dog's a fire. My dog is an extrovert. My dog gets renewed and thrives from social engagement and connecting with people and bringing people joy. Like, that's, my dog loves that. And so what if I was able to look at my dog's behavior, like, as in, like, when my dog is seeking engagement and wants to play, wants to do something with me, what if, instead of seeing that as annoying and demanding, what if I could reframe that and I could see it as, oh, my dog is trying to make me happy. My dog thinks I must be kind of sad because I'm just sitting here quietly. And my dog is actually trying to make me happy and make me laugh. You know what I mean? And so, like, just being able to see it through different eyes can make a big difference. Does that make sense?
It does.
Andrea? Yeah.
It makes sense. I think just seeing or realizing that we're so different, and maybe, like you said, stepping back or also not taking it so personally. Like, I think one big struggle we're having, especially during COVID, is like, he wants to meet everyone and we just can't. And so to me, I think that's inappropriate. Like, his behavior, like pulling me, is inappropriate. But if I see it as like, well, he just, you know, he's living out his fire personality. Like, not to say that it's like fine, because it's not, you don't get to drag me down the sidewalk, but
right.
But yeah, you know, in context
behind it, like,
yeah,
the dragging and the pulling is inappropriate, but the motivation is understandable.
Right. That does reframe it.
It does, right? I understand you want to socialize, buddy. I totally get it. Gosh, but I'm sorry, right now we just can't, mm-hmm. you know, let's do mm-hmm. this instead. Mm-hmm. And it just makes us feel differently about it, right?
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful. I guess I just was having a hard time filling out, like, when I was the part of the module 3 questions about kind of applying the personality types, I didn't know really how to, but like you said, it's going to come up again next month. So
yeah. And it, yeah, and you know, you just start, if you just start, like, take the like, just like the basic, you know, top level personality traits, you know, for the both of you, mm-hmm. you know, just primary, just like top level, and just start to, like, look at your life and maybe the, some of the struggles, you know, mm-hmm. and start to just contemplate, like, oh, like, is the reason he's behaving that way? Is it because of, you know, his personality type? Is there something there, you know, that is driving him in a very natural way? And maybe it's coming out, like, it's expressing inappropriately because he feels thwarted or frustrated mm-hmm. by his inability, you know what I mean? And if that were true, I wonder what I could, like, how could I accommodate that? not compromising myself in my own safe, calm, and happy, mm-hmm. you know, not to compromise myself in my own needs, but to meet somewhere that we're both okay with, or, you know, where maybe sometimes I'm willing to say, like right now, I'm willing to be social because it gives you an opportunity to express yourself. Or maybe I don't want an opportunity to be social, but maybe because of the pandemic. However, what I can do is make a play date for you mm-hmm. with some family members or some dog friends or whatever, mm-hmm. so that you can be social. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I don't actually have to do that with you, like play with you and socially. I can like stand by and watch you. Maybe I could even drop you off. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So it can give you, like, if you start to look at some of the different things that are coming up for you guys that are like misaligned or, mm-hmm. you know, disharmonious, that are causing some friction in your relationship, in mm-hmm. your partnership, maybe see what you can do through the filter of why you feel that the way you do about his behavior, and mm-hmm. look at root causes and what can you do to accommodate, you know, and maybe the other twist, or not twist, but the other perspective of what can you ask of him to do to accommodate you mm-hmm. that he would find doable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That it's not asking him for something that's crazy hard to help you feel safe, calm, and happy. That it's maybe a bit of a stretch for him, but doable. You know, and so look at it from that perspective. So as a fire dog, so let's just take this as a fire dog. So he loves to make you laugh and to make mm-hmm. you feel happiness and joy. And he thinks, I'm just going to make this up. He thinks that the way to do that is to get you socially engage with other people on your walk. Like, I'm pretty sure that this would make you happy if you would only go with me on this. You know what I mean? and so if you look at it, like, well, what he really wants to do is help me to feel happy and filled with joy and make me laugh. You know what would make me happy and filled with joy and make me laugh is this. Mm-hmm. Like, we could go over to the woodland trail and we could have a game of chase me in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
That would make me laugh and make and bring me a lot of joy, and I would not have to be social with other people. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like the underlying need or the underlying motivation.
Right, yeah. Right. And so he wants to bring you joy and happiness, and you are totally okay with that, but just not in the way that he's thinking.
Right.
So give him opportunities to bring that to you so it makes him happy and it makes you happy.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
You can look around and just start to think and just play around and experiment with that.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah, thanks. It gives me a lot to think about.
Cool. Can't wait to hear what you try. Like, keep us updated. Cool. All right. So let's see. Jen says, I truly think Pax is fire, but I've been puzzled because when you say Wood is pushy, I also think he's pushy. Now I'm realizing it's just because I'm a water that I think he's pushy. That's a great insight, isn't it? Right? And so if he's just full of joy and excitement and you think of that as being strong and assertive because you're water, it just changes things, right? It certainly can change how we think about it. So that's a good insight. I love that. Be interesting to see where you go with that. Really cool. Anne says, I thought Vince was fire, but after this call, I'm going to take another look at it. Cool. Sophie says, I'm fire and Bobby is water. He probably finds me really annoying. He probably does. Or just boring. Let's just say maybe not annoying, but so boring. Like, Sophie, you are just so boring. So finding ways, like we just talked about with Andrew, like finding ways that help him express his need to bring you joy and happiness in a way that also serves you, you know what I mean? That doesn't necessarily involve, you know, like going to parties, you know what I'm saying? So be cool. Let's see. Marika says, you've hit the nail on the head again, Kathy, describing Mackenzie. I'll try and remember. She's always trying to make me happy. Awesome. Like, right? I mean, just that shift in our perspective can be so powerful. And it can take so much pressure off of us, you know? Cool. Let's see. Charlene says, Teddy is primarily water and I'm earth. So I feel that we're pretty compatible, whereas my husband is fire. And this could explain why they've had some difficulties in their relationship. Yeah, for sure. I love understanding the dynamics on this level. Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't need, like, it's not like we have to be, like, we have to nail it. We have to be perfect with the assessment, whatever. You know, it just, if nothing else, just thinking in terms of having a different perspective, just knowing that there are underlying personality traits that are influencing how we're receiving, how we're interpreting our dog's behavior, how they're interpreting our behavior. You know, even if we don't have like the personality types like nailed down, like, and we're in positive, that's okay. Just having that perspective of, oh, I wonder if our personalities are influencing what's happening in this dynamic, you know, it's pretty cool. Let's see. Jen says, I have a hard time figuring out Pete. So maybe looking at it through the lens of how a water metal would see the types would help me. Yeah, that's a great idea, right? I love that. And so looking at like if your water metal, you're going to interpret certain behaviors as being a certain way, right? And so knowing that, yeah, it's going to help for sure. Let's see. Sandra says, Monty is fire, Nigel is water. So when we're out and Monty wants to chase around and play, Nigella just wants to stay close and sniff around. Yeah, I'm metal, and sometimes I find it difficult to balance. Sure, because you want to orchestrate the whole thing where everyone is happy, right? You know, you want to create a spreadsheet about who does what, when, and how it should look. And that the dynamic, and so like you look at the idea of when we looked at your videos, like how you were interpreting Nigella's response to what Monty was doing, you were interpreting that through your metal personality, right? Which is, you know, well, she must feel that he's out of order and out of line, and she's, you know, she wants my help to help keep him more in line and more orderly, right? And instead, she might, you know, and it looked to me like, you know, she's just saying, hey, you know, you can go off and do your thing and be your fire personality, and I'm going to get involved as much as I want and hang back when I don't. And we're all good with that, right? She was, like, it wasn't disturbing to her that he's fire and wants to engage and that she doesn't. She's just like, yeah, I'm good. Thank you. You know? And so she wasn't interpreting that as inappropriate, really, in most cases, right? I'm sure she interprets body slamming as inappropriate, but most of the stuff, she was just who he is and how he is. And that's okay. I don't need to get involved in that. You know what I mean? I'm just going to sit back and, you know, let this play out in her own way. So it's interesting, right? Let's see. Anne says, I'm embarrassed to say I'm very competitive. Why? Don't be embarrassed about that. And I wonder if Vince reads me and tries to win. Yeah. I mean, And what do you think Vince is? You probably said it earlier. Oh no, you said you thought he was fired, but you're not sure. Yeah. So let's say that you're competitive, but let's say he was fired. It's not that he would be competitive, but he could be gamey. Like, oh, I get the game. The game is who gets to beat who, win, whatever. So the driver for him wouldn't be, I want to be competitive and come out at the top of this activity. The driver for him would be, oh, it's a game. I understand the rules. I'm in. Let's do this. You know what I'm saying? And so it would be like a twist. But the whole fact that perhaps he's interpreting that activity as a game and he thinks he understands what the rules are based on your Wood personality, if that's what was happening, there's an opportunity for you to take the gamey out of it if you thought that might be what's happening. You know what I mean? Something to think about, something to play around with, like, ooh, if he thinks this is like the rules of the game that we're playing, and these are the rules, I wonder if I could communicate something different about this dynamic and what's actually happening and what's more appropriate while still, giving him that sense of, you know, spreading love and joy and happiness and socializing if he were a fighter. So lots to think about, right? Kind of fun. Cool. So what else? Any other thoughts, questions? Anyone need some help with anything? So while I'll just see if any, because sometimes it takes a while for someone to unmute or type in. While we're doing that, last thing, I'd like to ask you for your takeaway or insight from today's coaching call. So, I will make a post in the group, but just, you know, a quick takeaway so far. Before you process it. What are you thinking? So if you wouldn't mind typing that in while we wait a few minutes, or not, like just a little bit here, to see if anyone else needs anything, any questions, anyone else need coaching? Yeah. Don't see anything coming through in that regard. So quick takeaways. Let's see. Linda says, learning to reframe the situation, maybe my attitude. Sarah says, how we filter experience through our types. PS says, they need to feel they're contributing to the family group. These are good, so good. Jen says, takeaways that our personality influences how we perceive our dog's personalities. Yeah. Sophie says, whoops, there we go. I have more job ideas for Bobby, and I'm looking forward to next month learning more about how our personalities affect things. Lori, yeah, can you talk about the 24-hour cycle? Yes. I'll just read a couple more of these. Low to no arousal bonding is essential. Yeah, experimenting, new habits. P.S. Steph says, jobs can be small, little things throughout the day. Yeah, Sophie says, more insights on the power of reframing. Personality influences the way I see Hannah. Make sure we're having enough cuddle and touch time. Thinking more about the bonding times. Good. Yes. Okay, so Lori, can you you want to jump on and talk this through? We can use your 24-hour as a jumping off point.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could talk about, I remember at one point we talked about how many hours a dog needs to sleep. And then when you're saying like we're looking at 4 to 6 hours of active time.
Yes.
If you're home during the day, does that change
No.
So we're still looking at, we're talking about those percentages within a 4 to 6 hour time frame, not a 12 hour or 8 hour, depending on when they sleep.
Right, because our baseline, like we're operating from the baseline idea that dogs, very similar to young children, require a significant amount of sleep. So, like, you know, using an 18 hours of sleep a day per 24 hour period. So that gives us about 6 hours to work with as far as like all the types of activities that are available. So that doesn't mean 18 hours contiguous, you know what I mean, of sleep. And there's, you know, I mean, that's a range, but that's pretty typical, you know, like, so a young child might sleep, you know, 12 hours overnight, you know, and then they, you know, and then they have a nap in the day of a few more hours, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, it is somewhat generalized and averaged out. And so that doesn't mean that some days, you know, a dog's not going, is going to be okay with sleeping 8 hours, and to be like a working dog might, you know, if your dog is, let's say, if you're a rancher and you're moving your stock across, you know, the prairie or whatever, and we're going to be doing that all day, you know, your dog's not going to get 18 hours of sleep that day, you know what I mean? And so, but day after day after day of that is going to not be good for your dog, because your dog does need that amount of sleep. And so the 6 hours, the generalized sum of 6 hours is, considering that most dogs do well with about 18 hours of sleep on average most days. That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I was just trying to, with Cabo being younger and more fire, it's more very active and very social, I just don't want to overdo it. So I want to make sure I'm in the right hour frame. And right. I don't disturb his sleep. When he gets up and he wants to be active, then we make a choice of what we're going to do. If he's sleeping, he's sleeping.
Right. So you have, so if you think about, you know, an hour a day, now this might not seem like a lot, but when we really look at it, if you look at an hour a day of high arousal activity, that would be like, let's just put it into exercise terms. I mean, there are other terms, but let's put it into exercise terms. That would be like, you know, running nonstop for an hour straight. That's a lot of exercise, right? You know, for anybody, you know? And so it doesn't look like that with our dogs, but I want you to, if everyone thinks about an hour of high arousal, strong physical exercise a day, that's a lot, right? Now, it typically is gonna happen in spurts. It's not typically, like, you're not gonna play like Frisbee, for example, with your dog, where they're chasing the Frisbee and bringing it back at a run for an hour. That's just not gonna happen, you know what I mean? However, playing Frisbee for 15 minutes, running back and forth and back and forth, right? And then later in the day or 2 hours later, your dog is running, you're going for like a hike, and your dog's off leash, and they're like running up and running back and, you know, sniffing and running. And so they're really active, you know. So let's say it's an hour hike, and for 15 of those minutes, your dog is running and aroused, you know, having a good time. And the other 45 minutes, your dog is somewhere in the medium, moderate range of arousal. So your dog is, you know, trotting and maybe sniffing and happy, maybe picks up a stick and is carrying it. And so moderately aroused. And then maybe sometimes, you know, you stop and you take a little bit of a break, you get some water, your dog gets some water, and there's no arousal, and your dog is just laying down panting. And so in an hour walk, let's just to take it, your dog might have 15 or 20 minutes of high arousal in that hour walk. You know what I'm saying? And that, so far we've had 30 minutes of high arousal, and you may have spent an hour with your dog in the yard, 15 minutes playing Frisbee, and you may have spent an hour with your dog on a walk, on a hike, and there was 15 minutes of high arousal. So you've been with your dog doing something for 2 hours, 30 minutes of that was high arousal, and an hour and a half of that was somewhere in the mid to lower-ish arousal level. You see how that works? That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't stretching my time out too much.
Right.
Within that protocol, there's also the no arousal, which could be napping. So
That's right. It will be, and some of it will be napping for sure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure he wasn't sleeping so much that I was forgetting to make sure that we had some medium arousal as well in there. So I think we're doing fine, but I just want to make sure about that. Again, I've always been confused about that because waking hours are different than that 4 to 6. You know what I'm saying? When we get up in the morning until when we go down at night, I consider waking hours. But for him, the waking hours are more a smaller window than that.
Correct, because in that, so let's say that you're down at night, let's just say 8 hours, right? And so now we have 16 hours that we could technically consider waking hours, right? In that day, though, in that 16 hours, roughly speaking, just to pick out an example, in that 16 hours, your dog, everyone's dog, is going to be snoozing soundly for, you know, 8 more of those hours, not contiguous, but, you know, they're going to, like, let's say you go out in the morning and your dog is active for 2 hours in the morning, you know, having breakfast, going for a walk, playing, blah, 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 for 2 hours, right? And then you come back in the house and your dog crashes out and sleeps soundly for 2 hours. Okay, so now we're up to 10 hours of sleep a day. And then your dog, you know, might get up mid-morning and you go out and, or maybe someone is at work off out of the house, but your dog gets up, you know, chances are really high that if you're not there, your dog is going to go for that nap. It's going to be a 4-hour snooze more than likely if nothing's happening, your dog is there. Some dogs that have a fuller bucket, they're aroused and they don't know how to be yet. They may be running out the window, like barking, you know, running up to the window and barking out the window while you're at work, right? And so your dog may have slept for 2 hours, but now your dog is highly aroused for 45 minutes because there's a bunch of activity outside your house. And so that 45 minutes where your dog is pacing and running and barking out the window, that counts towards your high arousal time, right? And so, like in Lori, if you're home, you're home with your dog, for you, it might mean like mid-morning, Cabo gets up and maybe he stretches and you're on your computer or something, or you're in the kitchen baking bread or whatever. And so he comes in and, hey, what's going on? And he's milling around, sitting down, you know, laying down, watching, chewing a bone. So low arousal activity, but he's awake, right? And so let's say that happens for an hour. Then chances are, then maybe you take him for a walk, maybe for 30 minutes, or he goes out in the yard for a while. He's going to come again. He's going to sleep for 2-3 hours. So now you're up to 13 hours of sleep. And so that's going to kind of repeat throughout the day, where there's going to be periods of time when your dog is going to, sleep. Other times, they're going to be more like relaxing, maybe napping, maybe dozing. And that is probably more going to count toward low arousal. Like if, let's, for example, if you're in the kitchen, let's say you're cooking dinner or you're making bread or something, and he's right there with you and he's awake, maybe he lays down sometimes and he kind of snoozes, but he hears the refrigerator door open and he's like right there because he wasn't really sleeping. He was just dozing. So so let's say that's like a 2-hour period where you're breaking bread in the kitchen and he's not doing much. He's dozing and sometimes he's alert. Sometimes he's getting a cookie, whatever. And so that would all count. That whole 2 hours would count as low arousal because he's not actually sleeping. So that would count toward your 6 hours. You know what I mean? And so you may find that some days he's not sleeping for 18 hours. Some days he's only sleeping for 16 hours or 15 hours. Other days he's sleeping for 18 or 20 hours, you know? And so we're looking at, you know, averaging it out and making sure to the best of our ability that our dog is getting solid sleep hours where they are not disturbed. They don't have one ear up and one eye cracked open, that they're like out sleeping for, you know, a good 16 hours a day. That includes their nighttime sleeping, right? So for most of us, like my dogs, like I count their nighttime sleeping in the evening, because by the time, like we're still up, we might be up watching a show or something, you know, we might be up until 10 o'clock, for example, and maybe we'll sleep, you know, from 10 to 6 in the morning and 6 we get up, just to take that as a range. But my dogs, after they eat, like at 6:30, or they're done eating and they're going to go potty, whatever. So like by 7:30, they're in bed. They're as good as in bed, but you know what I mean? Because they have opportunities to engage during the day because I'm home, right? So my dogs are actually sleeping, I would say from 6:30 in the, so from like, let's say 7:30 in the evening until 6 in the morning. So that they're sleeping straight. Plus they're sleeping during the day. Now, if someone is working away from home during the day or, you know, whatever, working away from home during what would might be waking hours for, you know, most of us, then we would have to, you know, make a good solid guess as to, or put up a camera for a couple of days to see what happens. How, like, if you know your, or your neighbors tell you, hey, your dog is barking nonstop all day long, well, you know your dog is not sleeping during the day and your dog is getting highly aroused during the day. Most dogs are going to mostly sleep during the day when we're not there if they're relaxed and calm and they're not stressed and don't have anxiety. You know what I'm saying? But if they do, or they are stressed and they do have anxiety, whether it's just carryover because, you know, they're reactive and they've been barking and so their buckets are full, or that, you know, right now their history, whatever, they're not yet in a place where they could just relax because, you know, and so they've created, that's not what I want to say. So they have been living in a state of like anxiety and stress for, you know, historical reasons. And that just keeps, it's still ongoing. That dog, even if you're not there, like say for 6 hours or 8 hours or 10 hours, whatever, you know, during the day, that dog may not be sleeping that much while you're gone. It would be good to know by, you know, putting up some kind of a camera or something to see, because knowing that is going to help you understand that when you come home from work, if your dog's been pacing and aroused and not sleeping for hours and hours, the last thing your dog needs when you get home is more exercise and more arousal, right? And so your dog, so you only have a, let's say you come home at 6 or 5 in the evening and you only have until 10 p.m. till you go to bed, right? What the last thing you want to do with that dog that's been aroused all day is give your dog high arousing activities. You could say that your dog's high arousal has already been met. So you and your dog while you're at, you know, in that situation, you're not going to give your dog more arousal activities. As a matter of fact, you're going to figure out ways to help your dog calm down during the day. Now, on the weekend, that may be different because you're home, you're, you know, if you see your dog is pacing, you see your dog is barking out the window, you're going to be able to interrupt or manage or whatever. So you may be able to do some high arousal, like playing fetch or whatever, on the weekends because your dog is able to relax more because you're helping your dog to relax. You're not just letting your dog do stuff. You see what I'm saying, you guys? And so, you know, we want to know overall what's happening for, with our dogs. And if we're gone a significant portion of the day working away from home, it's good to know what's happening. I mean, and no one else is there, you know, it's good to know what's happening. And if someone, you know, someone's always there, we can monitor that and we can make arrangements. We could say, hey, buddy, you're due for a nap, man. You know what I mean? You don't need to keep me company. You don't need to be at my feet. Let's help you take a nap. Like, you know, like just like putting our toddler down for a nap in the afternoon because they need a nap, right? They need to get their 18 hours of sleep in. And so if we're home, you know, we can make that happen. If we're not home, we have to figure out what, that's part of our job, is to just kind of figure out what we can do to help our dogs have that sleep time, have that downtime, so that they get their sleeping hours in, just like we would, you know, for our children. Because if our dog is not getting enough sleep, and especially if that's combined with too much high arousal, we can see where that's going to go. We can see how we're going to be having a lot of difficulty helping our dogs with sentinel barking, running the fence, barking out the window, all the things that, you know, that we reactive when we take them out on walk, et cetera. You know what I mean? We could see that, you know, how that all contributes to our dogs not being able to have a balanced lifestyle, and how our efforts to help them are being thwarted by the fact that they're not getting enough sleep and potentially they're spending too much time being aroused. So I hope that makes sense. And Lori, does that give you a lot of clear information to go on with Cabo?
Absolutely.
Any questions about that?
Nope.
For him?
No. Good. I think we're doing really well.
I do too. Awesome. Awesome. Great question. I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's, you know, it's like it's hard to sort that out. Like, how do we think about that? So it's a great question. And let me look in the chat and see if anyone else has any follow-up questions about that. Is our last thing. Some more takeaways. Awesome. P.S. says, I love napping for 18 hours. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, Marika says, it's a challenge. The dogs, a lot of the day, have one eye or one ear on me. I don't think they get enough solid rest. Yeah, so experiment with that. You know, like if there's no, can I say, if that fact, if like your dogs are not resting solidly enough every day, like sleeping soundly, if that is not affecting their behavior and their ability to live a balanced, safe, calm, and happy life, then I wouldn't fret about it. I would just say, well, somehow it's working out. You know what I mean? But if it is having an effect, then it's worthwhile experimenting with what it takes. And so if you have, so let's say like Marika, like if your dogs are always on alert and never sleeping soundly all day long, and that's having an effect on their reactivity and on their anxiety, etc., then it would be useful for you to experiment with figuring out how to facilitate them having solid, undisturbed nap times when they're not on alert at all. And to figure out how to make that happen. And so, you know, their safe place, you know, in their room, in their crate, no one there, door closed, whatever. I don't know, you know, I mean, every dog is different and every dog would find, you know, different situations relaxing or stressful, you know what I mean? But to know your dogs and experiment with actually facilitating a solid nap. And for us to be okay with that, like to, for us to say, like, I'm okay with you not having an eye on me all day long, you know, for 12 hours a day. Like I'm perfectly good with that. I what would make me feel safe, calm, happy is for you to take a solid 3-hour nap every day. That's what I want for us. Let's go do that. Maybe it means I have to, maybe, you know, I have to go take a nap too. You know, maybe we all just go take a nap. That's one way to do it. You know what I mean? I know if I went and took a nap, my dogs would just be laying down and taking a nap with me. Like, I don't do that very often, as much as I should probably. But, you know, that's what they do. They just go lay down. And so maybe we're the ones that need more rest or more downtime, more low arousal time. You know what I mean? Maybe that is our dogs giving us some feedback that will help us to thrive. I don't know, you know, stuff to think about, right, gals? Yeah, cool. Shirley says, this really makes sense. When I first adopted Teddy, I thought a long walk, active play with the other dogs is what he needed. But I soon realized that he was over aroused all day until I got home. Then I was giving him more high arousing activities and he was constantly having outbursts. It feels so good that I don't do that anymore. And I feel like you've given me a real sound understanding. Awesome. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Cool. All right, gals. Great call. I hope that you enjoyed this as much as I did and that you found it helpful. So, go to bed.